This is Aiden with Oddball Pilot. I'm up here in Nome, sitting down with the pilot flying with me, TJ, and Larry Eggert. He flies for Bering Air, and Jim West Jr., who is with the Nome Volunteer Fire Department. And we're going to talk about a rescue that took place here a week and a half ago up in the mountains just north of Nome on a peak called Mount Osborne, and it involved a climber. Being a climber, I was pretty interested in the rescue that went on after the accident, and the climber involved I'd been hearing about for years. I'd never met him. Turns out he's a fairly well-known Alaskan climber, and he'd been exploring back in these mountains on the Seward Peninsula for quite a few years, and he's really the only climber I know about who's been back there exploring on these peaks. And it was kind of unfortunate that he had this incident with a partner of his, and they were climbing a couloir, which is basically a narrow chute on a mountain and often can lead to a good path to a peak versus being on the face. And they're about 1,500 foot up a 3,000 foot line, and they're hit by either rockfall or an avalanche. They're not quite sure, and often in these cases it's really hard for the climbers to determine what exactly happened. His partner then broke both legs in the course of being ripped off the anchor. The rope was core shot, so the nylon sheath was torn, which then you've got the strands that actually hold the people is exposed, but those strands are delicate, so it's nearly a lot worse than it was. When the uninjured climber kind of pulled himself together, he proceeded to lower his partner down the mountain with the two broken legs, which was an arduous undertaking, and then he got down to a flatter terrain and hiked out a little ways to activate a spot tracker. He finally got a signal in spot tracker, and I think that's when Jim with the volunteer search and rescue would have picked up on it.
Right. We got the call I got a call from dispatch who got a call from the spot dispatch center down in Texas. And so they immediately notified me, so I sprung into action and called his wife and, you know, kind of got the lay of the land and what he was doing. And I know the climber of him. I don't know him personally, but, you know, he's been out in the wilderness out here for 5 or 6 years or 7 years doing oddball things, you know. So, but so I knew, you know, I wanted to get a sense if he had hit the 911 button by mistake.
Oh, yep.
And or did... It was a real emergency situation. We're new to the spot locating devices, but we're getting more accustomed to, and I think that's sort of the wave of the future to help simplify rescues.
And the way a spot tracker works, then, it's just a GPS locating device, and this is, I've used in ferry flying, so if I might have this wrong, though, and you've got two buttons, one that says okay, one that's basically I'm getting into trouble.
Right.
And then
it's help. Call for help. And then 911, there is an emergency.
Yeah, and the 911 call then goes down to a central dispatch, basically, for spot tracker.
Correct.
And then they notify the local search and rescue.
Correct.
Okay.
And it falls through. So I just verified that, and he had laid down a specific route that he was going to go. So we knew he was out at the end of the road, and he took a snow machine in back to Mount Osborne. The spot coordinator gave us his coordinates where he had pushed it.
Okay.
And that's where we found him. With that, after talking to her with that information, I went and called. We have, a paging system that pages all the search and rescue guys to meet at the fire hall. And I gave him a briefing. Had a conversation with Alaska State Troopers, who we've broached the private pilot situation before, and had using private airplanes to do state search and rescues.
They that makes results.
They frown on it,
right?
But in this case, with me knowing that he activated and there was a crisis, I felt it was necessary to get eyes in the air to find out what we're going to get into. We had some road time to, it was to truck up to about 28 mile, 38 mile. So it would take 30 to 45 minutes to get up there by truck. As we sent out our Hasty team, I got a hold of Larry and another pilot here in town, got him on standby. Then got a call from the troopers, and again, trying to update me a little bit more, that they said, well, let's get the rescue guys up there first.
Right.
Well, you know, and I went in, I didn't argue with them at the time, so I said, okay, fine. But as these guys were going, getting on the road, I called Baron Air and said, hey, we're going to need a helicopter, and I want you to launch here in about 15, 20 minutes, or whenever, the soonest you can get, because I know the guy is hurt.
Right. You know, it's partly because you know who he is. Mm-hmm. You talked to his wife. You know he's trying something that is hazardous. Mm-hmm. And if he hits a 911, something bad probably happens.
Correct.
And you just want to find out the point of launching the plane, get somebody eyes on quickly before your Hasty team. So I'm guessing you send up a sort of a quick reaction team.
Correct.
With some basic supplies first and follow with more equipment and people as needed.
That is correct.
And then just put the Baron Air's got a helicopter. Why not have them ready to launch?
Well, we normally have a Black Hawk. Here in town, and they're an air asset that has to be activated by the local rescue coordination center out of Anchorage.
And that's the National Guard.
Guard, yes. And they were not here in town. The helicopter was up in Kotzebue doing their Arctic care. They had six of them up there. So one of my plans, I got a hold of them and notified them, say, hey, Baron Air, if Baron Air can't get in there, what's our opportunities to utilize in a Black Hawk from Kotzebue? I know it's 30, 45 minutes, maybe an hour run down. You know, I've got to have a backup plan.
Right.
Evergreen Helicopters has a helicopter here, but they did not have a pilot. It wasn't ready to go, or something was haywire. So
right.
We've used Baron Air. You know, there are R-44s. Is not the best bird to do in rescues, but it will do the job.
Right. When you said you've been doing this 29 years.
Correct.
And Baron Air's only had the helicopter for the last five?
Last 5 years.
So that's probably a cool asset to suddenly have.
It's a nice asset.
Yeah. And not one to squander or to call in lightly either.
Right.
But.
And so, you know, when we notified them, they've got ready. As soon as everybody was out, I said, I'm not going to mess with the troopers. I'm just going to activate the helicopter and go. And it worked slicker than snot. I mean, Larry was over him. The helicopter landed and picked up a paramedic at the end of the road where our command vehicle was at. Picked him up and took him and landed at the site. Wasn't, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes later, our two Hasty team members got to the site. And while all this was going on, Larry was communicating back to the truck and keeping us informed of what's happening.
Okay.
In the meantime, I'm back in the office here, not in the office, but at the center here at the fire hall, you know, trying to get everybody, trying to plan for everything.
So you've got a radio and you can talk to Larry on the radio probably, or are you out?
No, we're working on it. Aircraft radio in our command vehicle.
Right.
But we don't have capabilities for when our Hasty team members are out on the ground to talk to the airplane.
Okay.
I mean,
they don't have handheld
aircraft. Not yet. We're working. That's a work in progress.
Yep.
And that would have been nice because this time the snow machiners were heading there.
So
they didn't know which way to go. I mean,
yeah.
A little bit not lost, but I went back and found them and they were sitting there looking around. And because I had an option then to land.
Right.
Because Corey got there with the medic, and I was watching them from the air and talking, and then relaying to the ambulance. But in the valley there, you couldn't talk to anybody, so I'd fly back out, climb up and talk, and then I'd go back, and all right, Corey, he said, we're going to need you here. If you can't find those snow machiners, you're going to be on the ground.
Okay, so,
and,
yeah, let's just back up. You got the call,
from Jim,
hey, yeah. Just getting your personal plane, not the Baron Air
personal plane.
but the Larry Eggers yeah. call.
Well, it was early in the morning. Jim did the right thing. I don't mind.
Go flying.
I'd be more than happy to help these guys out forever, you know.
Yeah.
And so I got up and...
You had coordinates from the spot tracker.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, I really wanted to see how they worked, actually.
Yeah.
Because I've got one. And But it's cold. That was a cold day, and it just takes a while to get everything organized.
Yeah, get the plane warmed up.
Yeah, and I wasn't ready for it. And actually, there was a lot of things I needed to do to start getting that airplane warmed up. And it'd be nice if it was parked where I could plug it in at night. I don't have that option.
Right, you're over at Nome City Field.
Yeah.
And you were on skis.
And I'm on skis, so I got, you know, I grabbed my propane bottle, and what it was the temperature that day? 12, 15?
Yeah, about 15.
Yeah, 12, 15 degrees. So it took a while to heat it up. And, once I got airborne, and I got out there and found him.
And that probably took 20 minutes.
Yeah, and it was real close to where that spot at, where he activated. It was right on the money.
And it could have even been any difference would have been if GPS is all they use different data.
Exactly. I mean, it was whatever they gave us, I was there, and I could look up the valley and see him.
So when you found him, the Hasty team's already on the way out, and you find him, and you were, and that, this is where you're calling back to the Hasty team.
Well, Corey was on the way.
Okay. With the paramedics.
No, not yet, because the fire truck was still driving.
Got it.
Because I got out there and saw him. Okay, there's one guy walking, and I relayed that back to the truck. Okay, because we didn't know what we were going to find.
Okay, so you've got the one climber walking and one...
Yeah, there's a tent, a snow machine, a sled, and one guy came out of the tent as I'm circling. You know, and he's waving, so something's wrong.
Yeah,
because he's jumping up and down, his arms are flying, and it's obvious he needs help. And then he's going like this, that I can land right here.
Right.
Well, it's dark in that canyon, and you couldn't see the snow bumps, and I'm not landing there until I see the sun comes around.
You said today you're just going to cause another rescue.
You're right, right. If you do this in a hurry, you can just create more problems. It wasn't a real good spot. But like Jim, no, I know the guy, and I know what he's done. I knew right where he was at when they told me he was the one. Yeah, I know where that's at. And he's done it before. And,
I just flew by and got some photos of the face.
Yeah, pretty impressive.
Because I'd looked at it before, years before, too, when I think of climbing it.
Well, join him. But no, and he did, I think he did what he, hell of a job rescuing the guy.
Sal, again, I forgot, he got his partner back into the tent, kept him as warm as he could.
Because then I got a hold of Corey, he was already there, and he's stopping and picking up the medic.
Right.
And by then, so I went back and, to make things fast, he didn't have to punch it in the GPS, Corey just followed me right to the
spot. Okay, so you basically...
In a helicopter.
Right, so you're just leading him right in.
Yeah, it was just real easy to lead him in. I'm looking for the snow machiners now, because I wasn't sure where they were at the time.
Right.
That's where communication would really be a big difference for us.
And so you're looking for the Hasty team, which is on the snow machines, and you still want to get them on scene. And they were on scene before they loaded him in the helicopter.
Yeah, they actually, our guys actually helped both the paramedic and Ian to carry him to.
See, they couldn't. That's what I was going to land for. Because they come out and told Corey, he's in the helicopter running. He's not going to shut it down.
Right.
Because he was worried about not starting it.
Yeah.
And it was obviously... you know, a bad situation. And I said, no, that's fine. He said, we may need you down here. And I said, get out and check the snow for me.
Right,
And he did, and the sun came around, and it looked really good. He said, yeah, snow's good. I said, well, if you need me then, I can land. So it was and then I went back and find this, you know, I called the rescue truck. I said, where's these snow machinery? They said, we don't know. They're somewhere up there. And by then I find them. Of course, they're looking up, and they're going, and you know, I've seen this before. You come down and just
you might have hold on out.
But as soon as they got there, then they got in the tent and you know, just lead them up, and they got up in there, and then that's where they helped carry it. And they said, because I said, well, we need a backboard. Can I land there? And we'll just put it in my airplane. So, yeah, I'll probably do that. And, you know, this was a conversation we were having.
Right.
And, yeah, I can do it if you need me. But right now, I'm not going to get in the way.
Right. While you're in the conversation, other things are happening. Landing.
Well, he was on the ground, got the medic in there.
Stabilizing this.
Yeah, he's in there talking to him. And so I was talking to Corey, and then they'd come out, and I could see him walk out and talk to Corey. Then he would pass on to me. He said, no, I'd get him in the helicopter. His ankles were broken at the time, we thought.
Right.
I think it was a little worse than that, but it's at that time, he said, if we get some help, we can carry him into the helicopter. And so that's when the snow machiners got them. They got up in there. It was perfect. It really worked good.
The other thing, too, with the helicopter, too, if he was... I think he was able to sit up.
Yeah, he was able to sit up.
But if he was flat,
yeah,
they have to take the doors off.
Right, stick a leg in the head. Right.
Yeah.
So I.
Well, and they won't do that. And I can do that in my airplane. I've done a couple of these rescues on a backboard.
You can slip them in.
Yeah, I take the co-pilot seat out, put their head underneath the dashboard.
Right.
And we can do that. And, because if that was an option there, because I don't know if you heard us. Did you hear any of the conversations?
And the idea of getting him in the helicopter, the plane, versus using a sled and a snow go is just to get him back to Nome quicker.
Oh, right. And it's so much smoother.
Yeah. It's a lot smoother, a lot less damage.
Smoother, and the patient care is better.
Yeah.
Right.
You're not giving up anything for taking care of that guy. He could go into shock, or he could go into, you know, it could be more damaging. To
And it turns out for this guy, it was probably...
All of the above.
Could have been a lifesaver.
Ian did keep his head. He did keep his cool. He did not lose, sight of the... He didn't actually leave him.
Right.
That's the best thing he could have done. Mm-hmm. And I really commend him for that.
I've read his blog. I think they did everything, in the context of things going wrong, they did everything right.
Yeah.
It sounds like you guys all coordinated pretty well. That's one reason I wanted to record this, but I think it sounds like a real, it's a bad situation, but everybody kind of reacted correctly to, make it work, as good as they can. Mm-hmm. And for the aircraft side, you're still communicating back to Jim by climbing up and getting out of the valley and calling back.
Yeah, I could call back to the fire engine.
Yeah.
And, I asked him, you got a backboard? If I need one, I can come get it, because we didn't know if he could lay up or sit down at the time.
Right.
And that's, it was really good to stay up high and get a guy that can talk, because they were in a bad spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back then.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's when you fly by it, it's really remote.
Yeah.
But the road's also really close by.
It is, yeah.
And was the road open all the way?
It was open to about 28 miles at the time. And I think...
It was about 10 miles.
Yeah, 10 miles more.
Yeah. Probably about 10 miles more.
So they had to go down into Grand Central and back up the valley and then jump over.
So that's about, 20 miles on a snow machine getting there?
Yeah.
By the time you go around, yeah.
Oh, man, without a helicopter bringing it back out on a sled.
It would have been miserable.
It would have been painful. Yeah. That's tell me the one in St. Mary's where our ground crew pulled a pilot in from a 1900 in a blizzard. Same thing, they just threw him on the back of the sled and just, broken hips. And that guy out in Osborne had been in enough pain already.
Yeah. Right. Definitely, yeah.
So do you find that with the volunteer fire department, you can use private aircraft?
Well, yeah. I've been around aviation, pretty much 35 years, pretty much all my life. And I know that Larry has gone far and above the call of duty.
Right.
And I think... having that asset availability to us, it takes a rescue legitimacy out, of the question. Sometimes we'll get a call when it's kind of looking like a needle in a haystack.
Right.
My wife, if I said to my wife, or ex-wife, whatever you want to call her, I'm going out hunting and not tell her where to go. Well, she relays that information back to whoever's on duty at the time, I don't know where he's going. So,
Yeah, he headed toward the Brevig or Shishmaref.
And I'll go to the opposite direction. But, so it's, you definitely narrow, you get a lot of eye, you cover more ground in the air.
Right.
But if it's storming out, the ground search is the only way to go.
Right.
In an instance today, this morning we had a call, another 911 spot.
Yep.
Contacted Larry.
Larry went out again.
Went out again. And, the night before it was howling about 40, 45 miles an hour down through there.
Right.
And this morning it had calmed down. Kind of the same scenario. We used the Blackhawk this time to go. They were on their way up to Kotzebue. Got a notification they were going up to COTS. And troopers had a little issue there wanting to spend money. Once they make it a mission, then they have to pay the bill.
Right.
If they're going to go do a complimentary flyby and see what's going on, stop, check it out, and wait for our Hasty guys to go, then, you know, they can just keep on going, and the troopers don't. They don't get charged for that.
Right. Yep. Yep.
It's a lot. But the way it turned out today, they got charged with it because the guy was in hypothermia. He was soaking wet from his waist down. He had stuck his snow machine in the willows, and that was the only way he was going to come out of there. He was almost he was mild hypothermic. So any joshing or coming out of there with a sled, it would have been a trauma incident.
How was it, kind of talking about that? Because you're a volunteer service here in Nome. How do you get funding? You do fundraisers?
We do. We have a major fundraiser at around just before Christmas, and it does
first Saturday in December.
First Saturday in December is the annual Nome Fireman's Carnival.
Okay,
it's an all night affair, and we just open the gymnasium. We have booths, and it's amazing what the support we get from the community. So I mean, it's very amazing, enough to carry us through the winter. And we are funded by the city of Nome themselves, so we have an actual budget to work with within the realms of the city limits. But when we go start trekking out further, that's when we draw from our resources.
Right, right. And then you've got, like for Larry, what do you mean? Did you just sometimes go out? You don't get compensated at all when you go out on a search.
Well, they actually bought me gas.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. That's good. I told them they don't have to do that.
I've burned 80 gallons in that hour.
But no, I don't expect it. I thought it was a really nice gesture. Because this is our community. You know?
Absolutely.
So you go out and you do what you can. And like joining the fire department, you know, I used to fly a lot of medevacs, and mine was always busy at night.
Yeah.
I said, I can't really do both. And so now it's my time. I don't do medevacs hardly much at night anymore, so I should go join the search and rescue now.
Yeah.
Just give me something to do at night. But, you know, hopefully they know they can call me anytime, day or night, and we just go. And this all started years ago, flying around and watching the medics on the snow machine races. They waved me down and stopped, and I landed, and
what's wrong?
Yeah, what's wrong? And the guy broken back.
Broken leg, broken pelvis.
I've hauled them all now. So. Like one of them was a helicopter with bent rope, pulled up beside a kid on a snow machine wreck. And he says, boy, he's got a broken leg. I said, well, how can you tell? He said, I can see the bones sticking out.
That's pretty obvious.
That's obvious in a helicopter. You're hovering there. He hadn't even landed yet.
He saw it hovering.
Yeah, he's
hot. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Well, it seems like Alaska has a fair number of really good local search and rescues. You got the North Slope Borough Search and Rescue, of course.
Right.
Incredibly well funded. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, not taking any credit away from these guys, do better down here. With the funding they've got here, people are really getting together.
Well, I think this situation right here kind of shows. You know, if you're willing to go and look and not get caught up in red tape and paperwork and just say we need to get eyes on the ground or eyes in the air, that it can really be effective.
You know, it's what we call community care.
Right.
And trust me, we've had our battles. So after the paperwork's done, we've had our battles, and it's not fun, but we all get together and go for a common cause.
Right, get the job done first.
Get the job and take care of the patient or person or persons.
Right. You probably thought this before, but with guiding, everybody's going to like little handheld HF radios. Mm-hmm. And you could get, they would work in the canyons pretty well because they don't need line of sight. Mm-hmm. I'll try to get some more information because guiding, you're always in the same position. You're somewhere weird.
Right.
And they work pretty well. They're small. They're not too expensive. These guides can afford them. This is climbing guides, not hunting guides. Climbing guides don't make.
Well, who do they talk? Who do they talk to?
It's amazing who you can talk to. But in the Cascades, we'll call somebody back in Bellingham if you're, way back in the Cascades. Mm-hmm. You can get a hold of somebody. Cell service is getting crazy good down there too.
And that's one thing too that they are. The cell service here is the technology is changing.
Right.
So we have to adapt and conquer with the technology as it moves, with the spots, with the cell phones, with In fact, today we got a call from a rep, trying to sell us a spot, not a something like a spot, but you can actually text.
And
you have to have a mini pad, and whether it would work on a great day like today, but when it's blowing 40, 50 miles an hour and you can't see 2 feet in front of you.
Yeah.
Let alone take your gloves off to do that.
Yeah. And it's changing, but it's not changing that fast for us. But
yeah. The spots are pretty, you hit one button.
Yeah.
Well, the spot does have that where it interfaces with your phone.
The new ones.
I think that's probably what it was, it wasn't spot, it was something, but it's all
hooked up to the Iridium satellites.
Okay. Well, they're getting more and more, like Spot's the big name. They're one of the first companies to do that, like REI has their own version now, and there are a lot of, there are more options than Spot these days, so that would
Well, it sure works good. I mean, that just...
That's good to know.
Two of them in the past couple of weeks, I'm sold on them. I bought one of them.
It's getting to the point where it's taking the fun away from the search and rescue.
I don't know if Larry, when we first started getting GPSs, of course I loved having the GPS, but like at the same time, you know, after about 2 years, like, wow, you really don't have to be that good anymore.
You don't have to know nothing now.
I know.
These new guys, like this guy here, you know, give him a map, you still don't know where you're at.
He does pretty good.
No, but you know, it's like today, you know, as we went right to that, and the other Tony was, he was in a champ. He was out, him and his wife were up searching too. And
okay, so you two of you out there.
Yeah, so it worked good because I went up one creek, and because we weren't, the coordinates that I had were a little bit off, and they had, the numbers were bad, but we knew already where it was at anyway, so we were looking some creeks. Because when I come up over the top of one creek and then down, that's when I saw him. And Tony, the other guy, he saw the snow machiner, so it worked good with both of us. Because I'm looking around, I don't know if I can get in here.
Right. Did you coordinate on the ground at all, Tony? Did you sit down and say, hey, let's go this way, I'll go that way?
Yeah, we talked on the way up, and before we took off, we discussed it.
Okay, it's fairly impromptu. You know the area.
Yeah, I know it. Tony knows it fairly well, and he's been, he used to mine up real close.
Okay, I just know that, like, you know, Civil Air Patrol will have these grid patterns.
No, we don't.
Official, you're more likely, hey, we know this area, this is most likely where they are, check over here, I'll check over here.
We'll just go by somebody's, you know, this creek or that creek, and that's, Tony, I just said, I'm going to hit these creeks here on the upper side, you can go down the lower side, and it worked fine.
That's an advantage, knowing the area, too, being local.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he spotted the snow machiners where I didn't see him. And he said, there's a bunch of guys down here on a snow machine that were down low. So I left and went down and herded them up.
Right.
Because they were looking. They, you know, it was obviously they were trying
to
find
them. So you're kind of a snow machine herder.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of what you do.
Well, we're soon, hopefully soon to get that taken care of where we're actually having communication with whoever's up on top.
Right, right. So you'll have folks on the ground have radios, they can talk to the planes.
Right now, you know, we're a group of about 30 guys.
Okay.
And I don't know who is going to be able to go at any time. So, right. I mean, we have everything kind of coordinated at the fire hall. And then we're just now getting used to carrying the satellite phones and carrying our backpacks and carrying everything to kind of help us if we get into the need. Because, you know, there might be a day that one of our guys gets hurt going out on us. I mean, that's always a possibility when...
That the rescuer gets hurt.
Or gets to be the rescuee also.
And that's always, so that's the first rule of rescuing, is don't become another victim.
Yeah.
Which leads people sometimes like, why are you getting in there? It's like, well, because we just make it worse.
Yeah.
So, cool. Does anybody have anything else to add? I think that I covered what I wanted to cover. I really wanted to talk about that one specific accident and kind of... Mm-hmm.
But no, I'm glad that you know we are able to call guys like Larry and utilize his service. And money's not an object, you know. If we could pay him, we would. I mean, it's just it comes, you know, paying for his gas. It's just a kind of a a thank you, and yeah. He might get a turkey at Christmas time. I don't
know. It cost me a lot of money. That carnival, you haven't been to the Fireman's Carnival?
You know, I haven't. I've been here before for it, and I'm just not that social.
That's the most expensive turkey you can get.
Is it?
For me.
I mean. I've thought of volunteering before when I was living here a little more, but then I just wasn't here enough. It never came up. But
well, that's what kind of, I always wanted to get involved with it, but it was back in the early days getting medevacs, and I was always doing those every night or on call. And it was just, man, I can't do both of these. And
yeah, that's a whole other discussion, and we'll have to sit down and have medevacs and the other rescues you've gone on with the your plane or the rides you've gotten in a helicopter.
Yeah, you know, I got my chance to get a ride in the Black Hawk.
That's good. I went to Northville Borough Search and Rescue in their helicopter once.
Yeah, they picked you up?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Yes, they did. We had a plane to the river. I wasn't flying.
You weren't flying.
Oh, you were the rescue too.
No, I was. I was in the right seat, though, so I wasn't flying the plane. But yeah,
don't blame it on me.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah, I tried to do that one time too. You know, but Dave Olson, the director of operations, was sitting in the right seat. Trying to rescue somebody. We became the need to rescue. And Bob Cower, wagon wheel, tore the nose gear out of a 207.
Oh wow!
When I told him I didn't, I kept saying I don't want to do this. I went, no, just try it. You know, you go in there all the time, you know that country. And I say, I do, but he's fine. Leave him alone.
My last words, I put my seatbelt on and pushed my seat back, and I said, you're flying the plane. I don't want anything to do with this. Yeah. I should have gotten out of the plane. So that's a whole other story. That's another story. Yeah. But
I know it's after it happened, of course. I landed, everything was fine. I didn't want to get on the brakes. I knew the runway was soft.
Yeah.
You know, and then we hit the soft spot just as we were stopping. I don't think the airplane rolled 7 feet and fell in a mud hole. then, of course, that was, you know, just, you know, we got it. I end up getting a call. Lucky another guy was flying by, Wayne Myers. You know Wayne?
I do, not real well.
He flew for Olson Air. They were 185 at the time.
Yeah, that's
he was flying for Linden now.
Yeah.
That's
flying for Linden. Yeah, you probably,
Real
nice guy. He flew for us for a while, but he was just flying by. And I got on the radio and, hey, could you land at about 700 feet behind the 207?
He probably couldn't.
He did. Yeah, he came right in and picked us up. And they fed him, said the same thing. He says, well, who's in the right seat with you? I told him. He said, well, isn't he senior in the company? I said, yeah, I guess so. Blame it on him. I said, no, I can't do that.
No, you can't do that. Cool, and I think the climber who was injured for throws is, I think he's okay, not great. He's still obviously.
Did he come out of a?
No, I think he's still there, but it's medically induced, so I think he's keeping our fingers crossed for him.
Oh, good.
Yeah. That's, so.
Did you pick him up in the ambulance, or who was?
No, I didn't. I was still there. I mean, we had two guys there at the in the garage there.
Well, I was just stopped over there, and he was talking when he got the ambulance.
Right. They don't have. There's no helipad at the helicopter.
No, and that's one thing that you know when we did our walkthrough at the hospital. I said, we got up on the roof. I said, "This is a perfect place for a helipad."
Oh yeah.
And they like the idea, but you know, and then structurally it would hold it for sure, but it's not on the market to do. They can't. They can land potentially down front, but still you're going to have to transport them inside with an. I mean, you got to go from the front to the back.
Right, so you're still moving them out of one transportation device.
And hopefully they'll figure out to put a gravel pad or something.
Maybe.
Just to get them close.
I heard, now this is a rumor, but I heard that Andrew Gorn and that they had a spot open for this guy for the helicopter land over there. But when I talked to Bering Air, because I have a company radio on my airplane that multiple frequencies, but I can talk to the hospital.
So it is the Bering Air Mall.
It is, yeah.
It's in disguise.
And I used to be able to talk to the hospital, but they're still behind in their radios.
Right.
They haven't got their system set up again yet, and they're changing it. When they do, I'll be able to talk to them. But I understood they had a pad for them, a spot, but I don't.
Yeah, it would be very, very tight on the back side.
Yeah.
They'd have to clear everything out.
Yeah, I drove up there and looked at it. And
it would be tight.
It was best just to do what they did. It worked out real well. Get the helicopter landed on that. But If they could ever come up with funding, the city or somebody put a pad by the helicopter.
Yeah.
Because then I'd want a landing strip next to it. So.
Right, yeah, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, you know, City Field 2.
Yeah, no City Field 2. But, no, I thought that worked out really well, everybody.
Cool. I think that whole, everything I read about it sounds like that whole, this whole rescue at Osborne went as well as it could go.
Yeah.
So, thanks, Jim and Larry, for sitting down.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
No worries. Aiden with Oddball Pilot, out.
We hope you liked this interview. If you found it useful, visit oddballpilot.com, oddballpilot.com, for more stuff like it.